This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to another episode of Echoes of Dissent, a weekly podcast that explores the events, the movements, the beliefs and the personalities. In short, the why a song of protest, a song of dissent was written and sung, and who created it. We look at its impact at the time and its relevance to today, if any.
So welcome home. I bid you welcome. We bid you welcome. Welcome home. From the bottom of my.
That, of course, was Dave Dobbin and Welcome Home, one of the warmest songs. It's a song about somebody making space for you. Today we ask, why is it harder to find a decent place to live than 30 to 40 years ago? Why is it harder to feel that welcome to your own home? The economists and policymakers tell us it's difficult to pinpoint. They give us interminable philosophical discussions and economic theories, and universities award more PhDs to people to research to figure out why. But today we try to cut through all of this and look at what we believe are three simple areas. We look at the role of government, we look at the role of banks, and we look at the much maligned role of landlords. Through the eyes and experience of three generations, the one we are in now, our parents and our grandparents. We're going to cut through the philosophical debate, the academic research. We're going to ask if this was intentional policy or simply nonsense decision making. But we will suggest that the fundamental causes of the problem were simple. The answer to fix it is probably not so. But what we do know is we elect a government. But what do we elect the government for? And we're going to note that there is a general election in 3 months' time. And for many of us, the cost of housing will be a factor. My name is Frank Carter, and today we listen to Martin Leahy singing Everyone Should Have a Home. He's an Irish singer, and he sang this for 20 Thursdays running outside the Irish Parliament. We listen now to Martin Leahy, who wrote this in 2022.
Are other people's gain, enrich the rich and make them richer. They see property as opportunity, a business that'll make the sickness sicker. If they build too many houses, it'll drive down the price. It's just cold economics to them. So there's no will to address it, cause it's not in their interest. We've seen it over time and time again. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. In this world, this life, it's a basic human right to have a dignified place you call your own. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. Safe and warm where you belong. Everyone should have a home. Housing developers that are hung up on greed, and hungry vultures swooping from the sky, crucifying rents that are on the increase. Shamefully they bleed the people dry. All the vacant properties, we can see them in our towns. Sign the papers and take down the boards. A home, not a hotel. A home, not a hostel. A home, not a cardboard box on the side of the road. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. In this world, in this life, it's a basic human right to have a dignified place you call your own. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. Safe and warm where you belong. Everyone should have a home. We've got landlords and government who vote and legislate in favour of investments they control. Our leaders they facilitate and then wave away the emergency created at their door. The money clients get richer and the poor just fade into hovels and holes they can't afford. Dystopian evictions, ruthless repossessions, a wealthy country's people and a stranglehold. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. In this
this world and this life, it's a basic human right to have a dignified place you call your own. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. Safe and warm where you belong. Everyone should have a home. Safe and warm where you belong. Everyone should have a home. Safe and warm where you belong. Everyone should have a home.
Martin Leahy wrote this in 2022 after he got an eviction notice of his own. His landlord was selling up, and after 27 years of renting, Martin Leahy found he suddenly couldn't find anywhere else he could afford. So he did something quite quietly and extraordinary. He took his guitar to the Gates of the Dale, that's the Irish Parliament, and sang the song for every Thursday for close to 200 weeks. In the rain, in the cold, until earlier this year, he said, I just ran out of Thursdays. One Irish paper called it an anthem of the housing rights movement, dignified and quietly furious. Everyone should have a home. Some people are missing other people's gain. Enrich the rich and make them richer. They see property as an opportunity, a business that'll make the sickness sicker. If they build too many houses, it all drives down the price. It's just called economics to them, so there's nowhere to address it, because it's not in their interests. For time and time again, everyone should have a home. In that verse, Martin Leahy suggests that it's perhaps the landlords. We're going to go broader than that. We're going to go back a couple of stages today. But in today's programme, we'll do this by looking at three generations. A typical young family looking for a home today. We'll look at their parents' experience and their grandparents' experience. Fictional, of course. We will ask how old each generation was when they purchased their first home, and how many weekly pay packets did each of those generations require to pay the weekly mortgage. For most of this country's history, everyone should have a home wasn't a protest slogan. It was closer to a government policy setting. Imperfect, patchy, not 100%, but broadly assumed. It wasn't necessarily easy, but it was there and attainable. Tonight, we're going to trace how that assumption quietly fell apart. So today, one fictitious family, but very familiar. We're going to follow them through the three generations, as I said, in three different homes, in three very different Hamiltons. And we're not going to point the finger at an obvious target, as I mentioned, your average mum and dad landlord. Instead, we look at government policy calls of the day, the banking rules and the money itself that built the market. Landlords and banks are simply, and let's be realistic, quite understandably, probably like the most of us given the chance, are playing in it. We'll go back through the next verse of Martin Leahy.
It'll drive down the price, it's just cold economics to them. So there's no will to address it, cause it's not in their interest. We've seen it over time and time again. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. In this world, in this life, it's a basic human right to have a dignified place you call your own. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. Safe and warm where you belong. Everyone should have a home.
And so we go back to 1961, within living memory for many of us. Ray Mitchell, our fictional 26-year-old fitter and turner at a local engineering works. His wife, Colleen, is at home with their first baby. They're standing on the front step of a brand new state-influenced weatherboard place. Three bedrooms on a quarter-acre section. Not far out of town. Not flash, but your average at the time. Cream and green, like half the street. There's a Morris Minor in the carport that Ray's still paying off. Yeah, the Morris Miners, remember them? Just before, round about the mini time. A veggie patch already going in at the back, and a Hills Hoist clothesline. Remember those? That Colleen reckons is the best thing about the whole section. On one wage. And that's the bit that stops people in their tracks now. Ray is the only one earning, the only one that needs to earn in order to pay the mortgage and all the other costs. Colleen's at home, and nobody in 1961 thinks that's unusual. It's just how it's done. It was not luck. It was government policy that this should happen. Government policy quietly doing a lot of the work in the background. Right through the 60s, you could receive your future child welfare. That's the equivalent of like the current Working for Families tax credits or in-work tax credits. You could receive a portion of those in advance in order to build up your deposit for a home. And there was also the low-interest state advances loans. So the maths that looks impossible to us now for Ray and Colleen was very manageable. Up to the early 80s, the government was still quietly subsidising and supporting something like a fifth of the cost of the average home. And for some reason or other, it wasn't pushing the prices up. And that's a critical thing. There was no shortage to push the prices up. For a family like the Mitchells, 1960s, right through the 70s, one wage was structurally enough. And that's the baseline we're about to watch come apart. So what actually changed? So here's the thing. Some of it is what government started doing differently, and a lot more of it is simply what government stopped doing. And this is from a policy, philosophical perspective. Governments in the mid-80s were suddenly changed their philosophy from the encouraging people to own their own property through to the neoliberal stuff that happened in the mid-80s. And not just in New Zealand, this is across the world. From the mid-80s, the whole idea that government's job was to help people into a home they'd pay off over a working life quietly became narrower. Means-tested safety net instead of. It was not always that safety net, as we now see two generations later. So that was government policy changes. Then there's the land underneath all of it. For example, in Auckland alone, the amount of land you were legally allowed to build new housing on was roughly halved because of the Resource Management Act changes. So between 1991 and 2018, this country's population grew by about two-thirds. But the rules about where you could actually build a house didn't change. That's not some grand conspiracy. It's decades of political inertia creating a scarcity. No political party or government, the foresight to recognise the growth in population. And also, of course, in the mid-80s, there was a reduction in support for trade training. If you've got reduction for support in trade trainers, you don't get so many tradies. Don't get so many tradies. There's a scarcity of the buildings, the homes that they can build. So there was all this stuff going on in the mid-80s. So we know that scarcity increases prices. Our next verse from Martin Leahy.
Housing developers that are hung up on greed and hungry vultures swooping from the sky. Crucifying rents that are on the increase. Shamefully they bleed the people dry. All the vacant properties, we can see them in our towns. Sign the papers and take down the boards. A home, not a hotel. A home, not a hostel. A home, not a cardboard box on the side of the road. Everyone should have a home.
Here we see Martin Leahy really hammering the developers and the landlords. I'm not sure that he's entirely got the whole picture there, and it's the really easy thing for us all to do. I'm going to veer away from that a little bit, because as we go fast forward to the mid-80s, we have found that government policy changed in the mid-80s, reduced training for tradies, so of course there was fewer tradies, fewer homes built, increasing population, and the support for government by government for families to purchase their own home was gone, basically gone. So that, of course, started to make things very difficult for families. So we move forward to the late 80s. Late 80s, of course, there was a massive stock share, you know, all over the world crisis. So Ray and Colleen's son and their wife, Dawn, are ready to buy their first home. And the ground has already shifted so far. And his dad would hardly recognise the economic environment at the time. Their place isn't new. They look for another place. They find a place. It's an older villa, a few suburbs over, a bit tired, a doer-upper, as the agent called it, because that's what they can actually get their hands on. Most weekends for the first year, it's floor sanders and paint trays. Dawn up a ladder while Grant's underneath the house sorting out the plumbing himself, because paying someone else to do it is really not an option. Friday night takeaways feel like a genuine treat rather than a habit. And crucially, Dawn is working as well, full-time in an office in town, because the numbers, the single wage that used to be enough to pay for the mortgage and all the other costs is not. The numbers simply don't work on one income anymore. And their youngest goes into a creche, a type a facility, a creche, a preschool that barely existed as an institution when Grant was small. There used to be play schools where parents would go with their children and have time together. Kindergartens, of course, but the creche from baby, very young age, they just weren't there in the 50s and 60s, increasing since the 80s. The sudden change in July 84, as we mentioned, the incoming Labour government with Roger Douglas as Minister of Finance tore up the entire rule book governing New Zealand's banks. Interest rate controls were gone, lending guidelines gone, requirement for banks to hold government securities, everything gone. Whatever you make of the wider project, its effect on housing finance was enormous. In March 1984, banks, about 13% of banks' mortgage money lending was for housing. By the end of that 2020, this had gone to about 60%, which means that the lending from banks were lending money for housing, which means that there was a lot more money available for housing, and money was not being put into industry, in productive businesses. Banks could see where the profit was because of government policy. And quite naturally, banks have to answer to their shareholders, pension funds, people like us, basically. And of course, their executives and whatever. But the banks have to answer to shareholders. They are required to maximize profit. What do? They will naturally go where the government points them. And where the government was pointing was lend money to housing. Lend money to housing, the price goes up because there's more money. And away from productive industry that creates jobs, health, education. End of story. We cannot blame the banks. It's natural to go with the money. Government policy allowed it and even encouraged it. Grant and Dawn get their home, but it takes both of them, where it just took their fathers, their mum and dad. And the timing is brutal. Living through their first couple of years at 20%+ interest rates was very, very difficult. And the looks across the kitchen table as we try to make the weekly wages balance. On top of two incomes, just to qualify in the first place, it was a struggle on two incomes. Genuinely different experience to buying a house that their parents knew 20 years earlier. The next part from Martin Lee.
Everyone should have a home in this world, in this life. It's a basic human right to have a dignified place you call your own. Everyone should have a home. Everyone should have a home. Safe and warm where you belong. Everyone should have a home. And government to vote and legislate in favour of investments they control. Our leaders they facilitate and then wave away the emergency created at their door. The money finds get richer and the poor just fade into hovels and holes they can't afford. Dystopian evictions, ruthless repossessions, a wealthy country's people and a stranglehold.
So Martin Leahy is firmly placing the blame on governments, and he is saying the government is populated by landlords who are feathering their own nest. I'm not sure that he's entirely correct. We do know that many of our MPs own rental properties, but I'm not sure that is the issue that is guiding their policy or has guided their policy over the last 20 or 30 years. It seems to me that it's been a philosophical shift from supporting families to the neoliberal rightish, not centre-right, but far-right policies of everybody survive and struggle. And that's how things are improved. Well, it clearly hasn't happened. So we were sitting with this for a second, because this is really where today's housing costs come from. Not from any one landlord down the road, but from the financial system itself. It was government policy. And as Martin Leahy says, yes, a lot of our MPs are landlords. But it was government policy, and especially the Rogernomics of the 80s era, which we're still attempting to recover from, the version of free market economics. It wasn't just New Zealand. We followed America, United Kingdom, and many countries across the globe. In summary, lending to housing suddenly became very profitable for banks. But much of the new bank lending over the last 40 years has gone into housing. That's unquestionable. And rather than saying into a new factory or a new export business. So a growing file of new money has been chasing more or less fixed stock of land and existing homes that has not kept up with population growth. Which brings us to 2026 and to Grant and Dawn's son, Jordan, and his partner, Aroha. They're renting a townhouse, one of a row of six squeezed onto a section that would have held one house in Ray's day. No washing line, a postage stamp deck instead of a backyard. It's tidy, it's fine, it's just not theirs. And they both know the landlord could decide to sell at any point and give them the standard notice. This is their third rental in 4 years. Not because they're restless, but because that's simply the rhythm of renting right now. Every time it happens, it's new flatmates or a new commute, new neighbours. They never quite get to know, because why would you invest in the street when you might be gone by winter? At an open home a few weeks ago, they counted 40 other people through the door in half an hour. Half of them clearly there to buy an investment, not a home to live in. Back at the start of this century, a typical New Zealand household needed about 4.5 years of its income to buy the median home. By 2022, that has stretched to 8.5 years nationally, past 10 in Auckland, past 12 in Queenstown. Prices have come off the boil a bit since, but the multiple is still getting close to 7. Closer to 7 would have sounded like an absolute catastrophe to Ray and Colleen of the early 60s. The old international rule of thumb says something past 5 times income is severely unaffordable. Nationally, we haven't been under that line since the early 90s. Jordan and Aroha both work full-time, no question about it. Not because they're chasing a flashier place than their grandparents had. If anything, they take smaller and closer to town. But because the number they'd need to borrow requires 2 full salaries just to service before they've even scraped together a deposit. Ray brought home 1 wage and it stretched. Jordan and Aroha bring home 2. And some months, it's still. Now, it would be dead easy at this point to turn around and put Jordan and Aroha's landlord and the banks in the crosshairs. Blame them for this crisis. But we're not. We're deliberately not doing that today. And it's worth taking a second to say why. A landlord buying a rental and a bank lending money are not operating outside the system. They're one of its most predictable outputs. For years, the government tax settings made property investment more attractive than almost anything else you could pay, put your money. Interest rates were low, interest costs were deductible, capital gains outside a short bright line were not taxed, and there was very low interest rates. Build a set of incentives that consistently reward buying an existing home over building a new one or over backing a business. And you shouldn't be shocked that when a lot of capital goes exactly where you point it, the person renting to Jordan and Aroha is very often just someone who read the policy settings correctly and acted on them. Often an ordinary mum and dad bolting one investment property onto their KiwiSaver and their day job. Not some villain twirling a moustache. The people who actually built that incentive structure sit in Wellington and at the Reserve Bank, not on the title of a rental property in a Hamilton side street. So solutions. We're not going to pretend there's one lever that undoes 40 years of settings in one pull. But a few things stand out from everything we've gone through today. And it's fair to say people right across the political spectrum agree on at least some of it. Zoning changes, up to 3 homes per section without a full consent, passed with support from every party in Parliament. That's unusual that everybody agrees. And that tells you something. Land supply is actually one of the few corners of this debate that hasn't been purely partisan. Both major governments agree that you've got to open more land. The Reserve Bank has debt-to-income restrictions have been brought in by the Reserve Bank in 2024. It's a genuine attempt to stop the credit-fueled price spike that we saw during the COVID years when money was literally printed and, of course, straight in went into housing. And there's a growing conversation, again, cutting across party lines to some degree, about build-to-rent developments, about making a long-term secure tenancy a real option. See, that's an issue. If people are not secure where they live, you're not building communities. And there's long-term, there's cross-party discussions and becoming agreements about the tax settings that make housing more attractive than productive investment. there's some discussion and beginning to be agreement that these tech settings are not right, that they need to be moved towards encouraging productive investment. Neither of these are silver bullets, and they're very high-level stuff. But there's plenty of reasonable people will disagree, sometimes loudly, about which of these matters most. It's easy to jump all over the landlords because we can understand that. But it says something that a country which once treated one wage and a state-backed mortgage as an unremarkable, normal minimum, now treats two full incomes and a five times multiple as a genuine achievement. Martin Leahy sang his song Outside the Dale for the last time a few months back, his 200th Thursday. He said the housing crisis he was singing about hasn't gone anywhere. He's simply run out of Thursdays. This isn't a story with a tidy ending. It's a story about what a country decides to make ordinary again, if it actually wants to. And it's not easy to undo the difficulties of the last that were created in the 80s. And, of course, during the COVID years of printing money. Ray and Colin had it, more or less, without ever having to ask. Jordan and Aroha are having to fight for a version of it. Their grandparents wouldn't even recognise. What we choose to subsidise, what we choose to zone for, and what we let the banks lend into, none of that's fate. It's policy. And policy can change. There's a general election coming up in November. What home ownership policies will we be looking for the next generation? Thanks very much for being with us. Look forward to being back with you again next week with another podcast. And we'll be looking at, why are lawyers so expensive? Is it time for pay equity between lawyers and nurses, plumbers, car mechanics? And I'm not suggesting that we pay our car mechanics $500 an hour. You can listen to this podcast and all previous podcasts of Echoes of Dissent at freefm.org.nz, your favourite go-to social media platform, or accessmedia.nz. Bye.
You would sacrifice much to be here. Therefore, the graces I offer my hand. Welcome home. I bid you welcome. I bid you welcome.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.